Adventist World Radio. From broadcast to baptism. Powered by SID Media.
Mfundisi, how are you doing this afternoon?
Hey, man, I'm all right, my elder. How are you doing?
I can't complain, man. All is good. All is good. Thank God for yet another day of life. I hope you're good.
No, all is well. All is well. Just had a few meetings to attend, but I'm done now.
Ah, lovely, lovely. Well, let's get to it then. We started off with a lesson on the life of Jesus before he came into this world. And today we are still talking about his life, focusing on his journey here on earth, etc. You know, even when he put on human flesh and came to live among us. But yesterday, there is a point or two that you actually wanted to get to. Perhaps you want to just recap for us as we are going to be getting into today's session.
Well, I think I will because that's actually the core of today's discussion. The issues that I raised yesterday. You know, when you're talking about his birthplace, so that's what we want to talk about today. When you talk about how the build up towards his actual birth and a little bit of his life, that all of that is the core of what we want to discuss today. So I think let's pretty much get into it.
Okay.
Lovely. So that we're able to cover a lot of ground.
Lovely. So tell me. So he was there. You say he began the beginning, and he was, of course, not on earth as you emphasized yesterday, and he had to then come down and live as a man.
Mm-hmm.
Only option which was there? Was that the only option?
Sorry, say that again.
I'm saying, was that the only option? Why did he then have to become man? I mean, surely there could have been better options.
Hey, man, you're reminding me of Pastor Mazibuko. I hope we don't get to that. That was definitely not the only option. Remember, even though I had mentioned many times that his... the Old Testament struggles to reveal him, we also have his presence manifest in many ways. Remember that we have his presence, of course, at creation, what we discussed yesterday, but we also have his presence manifest when Abraham acknowledges Melchizedek, right? We have his presence when Abraham is visited by him directly, when Sodom and Gomorrah is going to be burned. We have his presence manifest when the children of Israel are stuck at the Red Sea. They are looking to their left, there's a mountain. To their right, there's a mountain. Behind them, there's Pharaoh. In front of them, there's a Red Sea. And they are looking all around them. They're probably even looking to the ground. But nobody is looking up. Maybe let me pitch a tent there for 2 seconds. There are times when we look around to our friends and family and the other people, and we always forget to look up because Christ is present physically right there with a pillar of cloud. And when the night fell, he was there with a pillar of fire. So during the day, they are not scorched by the sun. At night, they are not terrified by the cold. There are a lot of instances in the Old Testament where he is manifest. When Joshua is tying his shoelaces, getting ready for war, then Jesus appears to Joshua, and Joshua draws his sword. He says, "Are you for us or against us?" And Christ says, "No, I can't be under your command, chief. I'm here as the commander of the host of heaven, because I must be here for you, not you for me." So Christ's money is manifest in the Old Testament in many different ways. So he is a God who is present in the Old Testament, yet he's a God who operates differently in the Old Testament. So his presence is there throughout the Old Testament. But maybe let me preempt your next question by saying the following. That when we now move towards the New Testament and when he is born, we also have to remember that the Bible talks about Matthew 1, I think it's 21, that it talks to a woman. This conversation with a woman is not starting in Matthew 1:21. It is actually starting in Genesis 2. When God says you are going to give birth to a son or to a child whom he's going to crush the head of the serpent. That is where the devil sees a lot of things happening there. And maybe while we're still there, let me just, out of excitement, well, it's got nothing to do with what we're talking about. let me just mention this.
Yeah.
There's a Hebrew word, ezer.
Okay.
He mentioned in that text in Genesis chapter 2, a help, I will make you a help meet, right? There's a Hebrew word there, ezer, which is helper.
Okay.
That Hebrew word, ezer, E-Z-E-R, is also found 15 other times in the Bible, right?
Okay, all right.
And 11 of those times, David uses that exact same word to express the sentiment that God is our helper. He says, I will lift up my eyes to the hills. From where comes my help? He's using the word ezer there. When he talks up, there are a lot of places where he uses that word ezer. Now, I became fascinated by this word, Moses using the word ezer in Genesis, talking about a woman that is supposed to come and help a man. Yet a woman is weaker in our perception than a man. But when David talks about the same word, talking about a God, he's referring to a God who is stronger.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't ask from help from somebody who is weaker than you. You can only ask for help from somebody who is stronger than you. So something that I had to think about when I was thinking about this whole thing, I then realized why it was important for God to have a conversation with Eve about a birth that will take place 4,000 years later.
Yeah. Wow. Wow.
If bengisile mdala, if bengisile bengizothi God uNkulunkulu washelu Eva, but could only use this thing 4,000 years later.
Yes. Now, let's come back to this. Now, I want you to please help us to look at how his life on earth looked like. Because we've had reports. We've had reports that he lived a life of a rebel. And he lived a life of a person who was a social justice activist. We hear that he lived a life of making sure that he turns the tables around, literally and figuratively. And we hear that the man lived an interesting life that was quite curious to those who were watching him, and quite uncomfortable to those who were against his life. Please describe his tenure here on earth.
You know, when you don't know the sanctuary message, then you don't understand the life of Christ when he was on earth. And you will not be able to see how actually he was the only one conforming to the laws of the kingdom of heaven, while everybody else had moved away from the laws of the kingdom of heaven. When from his young age, the sanctuary message is the sanctuary is a duplicate of what is there in heaven. Now, if you want to live according to the sanctuary message, you've got to be close to the sanctuary or in the sanctuary so that you are living close to God, because that's the ultimate goal, to be able to live having a relationship and being close to him. Now, he lives a life like that. And for example, they think they've lost him when he's 12 years and they're coming back from a camp meeting. But the guy is not lost. Mm-hmm. The man is He says in his response, "Don't you know that I must be about my father's business?
Yeah, yeah.
Why do you think I am lost?" So when you look at his life is actually shadowing or showing or typifying the kingdom rules. So even when you look at his first sermon, he talks about the kingdom. When you look at what the kingdom stands for example, he talks about the Beatitudes. The Beatitudes that, by the way, we find in Numbers chapter 6. He talks about the Beatitudes and he says about the Beatitudes that you are blessed, for example, when you are mourning. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. And you think about it, that is a kingdom law, because in the kingdom you are not supposed to lose anything. But if you do lose something, you must be comforted, because the law of the kingdom is that nobody must suffer in the presence of God. So when you look at his life, you begin to realize that he is classified as a rebel, because there are people who have moved intentionally away from the kingdom rules and the kingdom laws. One of them is the following. Remember that they were approaching the year of Jubilee. When they killed him, that was the year of Jubilee. And when he goes into the temple to turn the tables over, he was actually putting forward a clear message. The clear message was this: gentlemen, this is the year of Jubilee. People have come here to do business with the church. And the church has given people loans. The church has taken away people's land because of the transactions that were taking place. All of that is okay. It's fine. Now, this year, you must return that land, because the church is not supposed to be owning anything. The church is supposed to be creating a platform for people to have better lives. But what you have done, you have created a platform for people to have the worst, poorest life here on earth. So he says, he turns the tables, because he's saying, stop selling these animals here that are looking, that have blemish and what. I mean, you can't take away somebody's animal and say, no, this one is not fit for a sacrifice. Then you go and you sell them the same animal 3 times the price, and you say, no, this one. So what he was doing was, leave this injustice and move according to the kingdom laws. So when he does that, he's then labeled a rebel. But worse than that, because he says to them, no, guys, me, I'm the promised child. I'm Emmanuel. I wish I had time to talk about Emmanuel.
Yeah.
He says to them, you see, the word Emmanuel is a Hebrew word. When you talk up, when you break it down, it says that it is us with God, right? Im is us, Manu is with, El is God, right? So we are the ones who are with God. He says to the guys, I have come so that you can be with me. and then the guys are saying, hey, this is blasphemy, man. What kind of person is this? He's busy. That's when they are building the charge, which we'll talk about tomorrow. That's when they start building the charge that this guy is an imposter. This is identity fraud. He cannot be a God, because what good can come out of Nazareth? They start talking about those kind of things, right? And they're saying that the man is not whom he says he is. So his life is a life that is full of trouble only because he was doing the right thing.
Only if he was doing the right thing. Now,
only because he was doing the right thing.
Now, the choice of his birth seems to be leaving quite a shocking taste to some. Because here he is born to a woman who brought uncertainty to her husband-to-be. I mean, they were engaged to be married, as it were. And here she comes and she says, I'm pregnant. And the brother, of course, naturally would then said, no, then I'm not getting into this. Sorry, because you do your own thing and go ahead with your life. Now, he's born under those circumstances, you know, getting pregnant out of wedlock. And why would this woman be put to shame for such a grand idea?
You know, when Ellen White talks about this, she says that the woman actually had never slept with the fiancé. So she was a virgin because she had never slept with anyone. But after she gives birth to Christ, she still does not sleep with with the man that she then gets married to. And that was a divine project. The circumstances that are visible in front of everyone are not necessarily circumstances that define whom he is.
Okay.
Those are circumstances that are perceived by those who are watching, but they are not circumstances to define whom he is at birth. Whom, remember, let me share just a theological nugget. Mm-hmm. Remember that when he's in the stomach of Mary, Mary thinks that she is taking care of her fetus. It was her fetus that was providing for her, that was taking care of her. That the situation was in reverse. There was nothing that Mary could do to protect baby Jesus. Everything was baby Jesus taking care of Mary. Now the circumstances could never define both him and his mother, because the mother knew who he was. When she gives an instruction at Cana and says, hey, the wine is finished, do whatever that this guy says, she's giving an instruction because she understood very well whom she had mothered. So it tells you that those circumstances did not define her. Those circumstances did not define her boy. Those circumstances were only according to the ones who were looking, not understanding the prophetic vision that was being played in front of them.
Yep. Wow. All right. Let's draw towards the close now. So, he is brought under these conditions, but not ideal to some, because it's not a perfect setup, and yet this sacrifice is supposed to be a perfect sacrifice. Quite a contradiction, as it looks, under imperfect conditions, yet it's supposed to be a perfect sacrifice without blemish. Isn't that a blemish, though?
Look, the sacrifice itself, so... Well, we spoke about this a little bit yesterday, that the path of everyone who is born is through a womb that is already got blemish itself. And so the path for a man and a woman to come together and then a child is born, that in itself, Paul says, that is a sinful journey that you are taking into. That's why you arrive here, you're already a sinner. Because you came here through a sinful journey. That and so the miracle of the inception or the conception of Christ without a man.
Is it an immaculate in conception?
Ooh, hey, you're speaking English there, my elder.
We've had this concept of the immaculate conception, and I think there's quite a bit of a talk around it.
I know, and I'm afraid to delve into that because it needs a little bit of
in-depth dissection. All right, no, that's fine. Let's put it aside. Yeah.
Yeah. But let's leave it at you know, at the surface level of a miraculous inception. Let's leave it at a miraculous, you know, conception, where it is only by the agency or the ministry, rather, of the Holy Spirit that Mary becomes pregnant. And when he is pregnant, divinity plays a big role in making sure that the circumstances continue to be favorable, so that the family continues to operate properly and all of that. Now, when he is in the stomach of Mary, one of the things that take place is a meeting between the cousins. John and Christ meet. John is quiet the whole time from when he is conceived up until the time when he meets Jesus. He does not move, he does not turn, he does nothing until the day he meets Jesus. That's the day, that's the first time he actually moves and he begins to worship and he begins to praise God in front of Jesus. The unconscious John worships the baby Jesus, yet the conscious John asks a question: is it him, or is it, ask him that, is it you, or is there another yet to come? The things that happen in our lives that we should be very conscious of, where we doubt God even when it is unnecessary. Don't doubt God. God knows what he's doing. He's in charge, he's in control. Even when it looks like he is not in charge, that is when he is more in charge, because what he is doing, a thousand ways are what he says, a thousand ways are the answers that he has to answer to that one problem that you have.
Yeah. Now let's talk about his mission when he was here on earth. We see that at some point he is tempted, by the enemy. Turn these stones into bread during the fasting period. We see at the critical time where he seems to be failing. If this cup be passed from me, Father, why are you forsaking me? These were difficult times, and it seems as though there was a massive risk of him failing in this mission, particularly because he was a fully human as well. But talk to us about that possibility, because there existed a real, because if truly he was fully human, then there existed a full risk of him actually failing in that mission. Please just address that for us.
Remember we spoke about this partly yesterday, where we spoke about the fact that the devil had been looking for him from creation. When Adam takes up his body, it is the body of Christ that Adam takes up, and that's why the devil thought Adam was Christ. And then he mistakes Cain for Christ. He then mistakes for many years, he mistakes a lot of people. He goes around afflicting the righteous, like Job, thinking that possibly this may be him. But we spoke about the issue in chapter 2 of Genesis, that by the time God says to Eve that you are going to give birth to a son who will crush the head of the serpent, there comes the coordinates where the devil must look. So when he finally finds Christ 4,000 years later, what he wants to do, because he knows this human form is prone to sin. I have done it before 4,000 years ago. I can do it again even now. And so by the time he has had 4,000 years worth of practice, by the time he then tempts Christ, he thinks that he definitely is going to win with that temptation. But you see, the problem with his calculation is that he thinks that Christ will not see him, will not know Christ will not know whom he is. He will not understand himself. You see, sometimes when we don't see who we are, we don't understand who we are, then we make foolish mistakes. You start living a wayward life. You start doing things that are not supposed to be done. You start having problems that were not supposed to even be given birth to, just because you didn't know who you are. If you understand who you are, then you will know that the power that lies in you only needs you to stand up and say, I am the child of the Most High God. I am the child of a God Look, Christ understood who he was. He knew who he was. And so when the devil talks to him, the devil is tempting him about giving him a kingdom. But Christ understood that he is there to take the kingdom, to snatch it out of the hands of the devil. He didn't have to bow down to the devil so that the devil can give it to him. No, Christ knew that the battle had been won way before, because there was a plan to win that battle. So by the time the devil is coming to tempt Christ, Christ looks at the devil and he thinks to himself, this guy, I mean, so many prophecies that have prophesied about this moment of taking the kingdom away from him, taking earth.
Man. It is now 5 minutes before the hour, 4 o'clock. I must tell you that this is an excellent, excellent conversation we are having here. Is the pastor saying, right, that we lost him there a bit? Pastor, I've got a question here that comes from the line. Derek is asking, is the pastor saying Mary remained a virgin throughout and never consummated her marriage?
Hi, say that again, Dan.
I'm saying I've got a question here coming on the line from Derek. The question is, and very briefly deal with it, we're going to be going to the news at the top of the hour. The question is, is the pastor saying Mary remained a virgin throughout and never consummated her marriage?
Man, if my memory serves me well, that is according to Ellen White. I will look for the quote and send it through. But my understanding, according to Ellen White, is that Mary did remain a virgin, or rather did remain without consummation of her marriage for the rest of her life.
And then didn't have brothers?
The brothers came from a previous wife. So Christ, by the time Christ is born, there are brothers that he already had.
Okay.
From Joseph's previous marriage, when Joseph had lost his wife. That is actually why Joseph is now getting married to a young virgin, but having children from the previous marriage.
Oh, okay. Interesting. All right, we're looking forward to definitely getting into that. You're saying that you're going to get us and lead us to where that is. So all in all, Pastor, as he came, he lived his life and then he died. You're saying that it was perfect without blemish until the sacrifice was made?
Definitely, because if it had blemish, it wasn't going to be worth it. And that is why when at the point of death, we'll deal with this tomorrow, at the point of death, the lamb that is on the altar, somewhere about a kilometer away in the temple where the high priest is raising the dagger, that lamb runs away, because that lamb is only the type, the antitype, the one that is truly, truly without blemish. That is the one who is at the cross, and he dies for both you and I.
Beautiful. Pastor, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to be connecting with you once again tomorrow, same time and same place.
Definitely. Thank you so much for being with me. God bless.
Lovely. Thank you.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.